You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. A teenager was fatally shot at a roundabout in Juneau's Mendenhall Valley early this morning. According to a news release from the Juneau Police Department, the fatal shooting happened shortly after midnight. Earlier today, police identified the victim as a 16-year-old boy and the shooter as a 24-year-old man. Their names have not been released to the public. This is JPD Deputy Chief Craig Campbell.
Both drivers appear to have been unknown to each other before this incident.
According to police, the 24-year-old told officers that he was followed by another vehicle beginning near Safeway and continuing to the roundabout connecting Stephen Richards Memorial Drive and Mendenhall Loop Road. The man reported that he drove around the roundabout multiple times before stopping. He says the teenager then pulled up alongside his vehicle. The man told police the teenager was upset and yelling and appeared to have a rifle in his hand. He says the teenager then pointed the weapon at him. Then the man pulled out a pistol and fatally shot the teenager.
The driver was pronounced deceased at the scene. A pellet BB-style CO2 rifle was found with the deceased driver.
Police say the shooter called 911 to report what happened and waited at the scene for police to arrive. After a preliminary investigation, police released him from custody. Campbell says JPD will continue to investigate the incident. The information they gather will be forwarded to Juneau's district attorney's office, who will determine if charges are warranted. And the Alaska Board of Fisheries is entering its second week of deliberations on Southeast Alaska fishing regulations in Ketchikan. The seven-person board meets every 3 years to vote on changes to how state fish and game manages the region's fisheries. Some of the most controversial and anticipated proposals of the meeting will be before the board this week, like slashing the production of hatchery pink and chum salmon and major revisions to the state's management plan for king salmon across gear groups. There are nearly 90 fin fish proposals before the board. The board will likely start voting on salmon, trout, and herring changes on Friday. The state regulatory group will take up herring proposals this week, and it could also adopt changes on how the Sitka Sound Sack Row herring fishery is managed, like lowering the maximum harvest level or closing certain areas to commercial fishing. But the board is meeting at a time when recent state data on herring has been called into question. Last year, the allowable herring harvest in Sitka's commercial herring fishery was set at a record-breaking high at just over 80,000 tons. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game manages the fishery and sets the harvest level based on its herring population projections for the year. But a report recently published by ADF&G now suggests the state overestimated last year's mature herring population by almost double. In retrospect, this means commercial seiners were given the opportunity to harvest around 40% of what was actually available. Due to market conditions, however, fishermen only harvested around 12,000 tons. For some, the disparity in the data is again raising questions about the state's management of the commercial fishery. Herring eggs are a traditional food highly valued by the Tlingit people, and the Sitka Tribe of Alaska sued the state in 2018 over its management of the fishery. In a press release last month, a local advocacy group, the Herring Protectors, said the report calls into question the department methodology, and the situation underscores the need for reform, like lowering the harvest rate or adopting a model where tribal governments can manage fisheries with the state. And Alaskans testified overwhelmingly in favor of a bill that would boost per-student funding at a meeting of the House Education Committee Wednesday night. House Bill 69 was introduced last month by Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Hemshute and would raise state funding for schools by about 30% over 3 years. KCAW's Meredith Reddick stopped by Sitka's Legislative Information Office on Wednesday night to listen in on testimony.
About 10 people gathered in Sitka's Legislative Information Office on January 29, all waiting for their turn to testify on House Bill 69. A few sat hunched over their phones, reviewing their notes. Others, like Hoots Elementary School teacher Joe Montagna, quietly watched the testimony proceedings on a television in the corner of the room.
Everyone's nervous. You know, no one likes to public speak.
Montagna has felt the impact of statewide cuts to school funding in recent years. Last year, the Sitka School District cut more than a dozen teaching positions, including a music position at the lower elementary school where he teaches physical education. Now, Montagna is teaching PE and music.
You know, because I could do it, I just offered. And, you know, I part-time teach music in our schedule, but they're paying me to be a PE teacher. But I sprinkle so much music into their curriculum. We'll have a spring concert with Mr. Joe as the conductor this year. So for me, it means maybe music will come back in our budget one day. Who knows?
On the other side of the room, Sitka High School senior Jasmine Wolf waited to testify. She said she wants students to have access to electives like music and welding and woodworking.
These are the programs that kids come to school because of. It's not the math, it's not the science. It's having the opportunity to play their instrument in a band class. It's the opportunity to build things and weld things in their classes. It's what makes going to school fun and exciting.
The 10 Sitkins at the LIO were far from alone. More than 140 Alaskans around the state called in to testify, mostly in support of the bill. Many lamented staffing cuts and school closures in their communities. Juneau Douglas High School senior Tessa Polashik said she attended Thunder Mountain High School until it closed last year due to funding cuts. She said the closure has been challenging for students and teachers.
One of my teachers has to stand on a step stool to talk to the kids in the back of the class because the classes are so large. And I really wish this on no other school in Alaska, but when we don't have funding, that's what's going to happen.
Others, like Anchorage parent Mara Kendall, expressed concerns about teachers leaving the state because of unreliable funding.
I would like for my Alaska-born child to be able to continue to teach in the state of which she was born and not be forced to move outside of Alaska or to be worried each year whether or not she'd be signing a contract for the following year.
While most testimonies supported the bill, a handful of Alaskans shared their opposition, including Palmer parent Bruce Owens, who said he was worried the bill would translate to higher taxes.
Where is that money going to come from? We do not have the money. The governor has already put forth a budget that's already $1.5 billion in the hole, and now you guys are going to add to that. We want a quality education, but how much are you going to burden us taxpayers?
Testimony lasted about 3.5 hours. The bill will move to the Finance Committee before it goes to the floor for a vote. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
And the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has released a new catalog that chronicles more than 100 species of seaweed commonly found in Alaska. The agency says the guide will serve as an important resource as Alaska works to get in on kelp products. But as the Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt reports, the state's industry still has a ways to go.
The turquoise waters of southeast Alaska are an ideal environment to grow species ranging from Pacific oysters to sugar and ribbon kelp, and it's starting to show, at least in some places. 40 mariculture farms are now located in southeast alone, according to a NOAA report from last year, and more are coming statewide. Alaska received more than a dozen applications for new sites on average each year between 2019 and 2023. That's more than double the amount of applications on average the 5 years prior.
A decade ago, I don't know if there's a single farm. And now we see multiple around Kodiak, some pretty small scale ones in Ketchumek Bay and in Prince William Sound, and then a few smaller medium sized ones and a large one as well in southeast Alaska.
That's Jordan Haller-Smith, a mariculture focused research biologist with NOAA. She didn't author the updated guide, which was released earlier this month, but she does say it will be a crucial tool as the industry grows. In 2023, the agency announced it would start exploring which parts of the state might be able to support multiple commercial farms. At one point, that included the waters surrounding Haines. But NOAA later dropped Haines as a place to study, given that the area is near several state marine parks, which cannot overlap with farm lease applications. The agency's new field guide, for its part, doesn't focus on the quickly growing industry, but it does provide detailed information about dozens of seaweed species commonly found in Alaska. That was made possible in part by new genetic techniques like DNA sequencing that have allowed researchers to better classify seaweed and identify new species over the last decade.
It's really important that we're all using the same name to describe a given species, especially in this time of kelp industry growth when farmers are experimenting with new species and trying to understand what species are out there and what kind of benefits they might have.
The industry in Alaska is still tiny compared to other coastal states, like California, Oregon, and Washington. But it's steadily gaining ground for a few reasons. Key among them is a $49 million federal grant awarded in 2022 to a coalition of companies, agencies, tribes, and researchers working to boost the industry. NOAA said at the time that the grant could help grow the industry to be worth nearly $2 billion within the next decade. A state task force, meanwhile, set a goal in 2016 to develop the industry into a $100 million business by 2040. driving the state's interest in part, Hollersmith says, is the industry's potential to boost Alaska's coastal economies.
One of the really strong benefits for Alaska specifically is this working waterfronts and giving people additional income opportunities from working on the water. So we see a lot of people that participate in commercial fisheries also participating in the mariculture industry.
Hollersmith says untapped opportunities for Alaskan oyster farmers could also fuel growth. Kelp, meanwhile, is becoming an increasingly popular health food and can also be used for other purposes. The industry is exploring how different species can be used as a strengthening ingredient in concrete or in fertilizer to boost crop production. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 28 degrees and clear this afternoon. Tonight, it looks like the low will be around 19 degrees. And tomorrow and Wednesday look like much of the same, with temperatures hovering just below 30 degrees and sunny. Clouds look like they might roll in throughout the week, but it looks mostly clear and dry. You're listening to KTOO.